Hi everyone. Welcome to the weekly question and answer session for members of the Personal Paleo Launchpad. I'm Laura Schoenfeld. I'm a registered dietitian with a master's degree in public health.
And I'm Kelsey Marksteiner, a registered dietitian with a master's in human nutrition and functional medicine.
Thanks for joining us for this week's question and answer session. We'll be answering your questions from the private Q&A section of the forum. So if you have a question about your personal paleo code or about nutrition in general, let us know by submitting your question in the members-only area, and we'll do our best to answer it on the next show. And remember, this is just general advice and should not be used in place of medical advice from a licensed professional. So you ready to get started with our question today, Kelsey?
Sounds good, and we're going to answer this one together, guys. So here it is. Can someone please help? I haven't had a chance to read Chris's new book in its entirety. I would like to know if he has recommendations for what blood tests to get for someone who believes they are healthy. I have no known issues other than a rash that will not go away at the base of my hairline on the back of my neck, which is starting to really concern me, actually. I'm looking for a simple, comprehensive list as I'm going to get blood drawn next week and want to request certain tests in particular. Vitamin D is for sure on my list. So, two questions. One, is there information on recommendations in Chris's book on blood tests he feels a fairly healthy person should get checked? Two, if not in the book, is there an article or can someone, a moderator, give us some direction per Chris's recommendations? Hey, that's gonna be us.
Yeah, so that's actually why I chose this question, because I feel like Kelsey and I would be a really good group of people to answer that question for this person. So just to kind of go, with the first question that she asked, Kelsey and I reviewed the book. We're familiar with a lot of it. We don't know it, page by page necessarily, but I wasn't able to find anything as far as a list, and Kelsey wasn't either, so that's definitely something that we think is important for people to be aware of. So maybe in the future we'll be able to put something like that together. But as of right now, we're going to give you the information on this question and answer session. So hopefully that will be helpful for you. And if you want to take some notes to bring to your doctor with you at your checkup, then that would be a good idea. So we're going to kind of tag team this. I'll start off by saying that one of the things that generally people should get tested on a regular basis, with their annual physical or whatever frequency they go to the doctor, is a basic lipid panel. So that covers your total cholesterol, your HDL, your LDL, either indirect or direct, and your triglycerides. So total cholesterol, of course, isn't a great indicator of health, and there's a lot that can influence cholesterol, genetics, infection, just diet has a little bit of a role in it, but not as much of a role as we would think. So cholesterol is kind of one of those things that it's not that great of an indicator, but you do want it to be below 300 milligrams per deciliter in general. So if you have higher levels than 300, that generally indicates something's wrong. Either you have familial hypercholesterolemia,
That's a tough one to say.
or maybe you have some kind of infection or some kind of immune condition going on that's causing your cholesterol to be that much higher. So, if it's in like the 250s, I wouldn't really be too concerned about it. But we want it to be kind of between 150 and 290 at the highest, I would say, is usually about as high as it goes. And then as far as the HDL and LDL goes, again, it's going to depend on your total cholesterol levels, but ideally we do want to see HDL above 60. It'll depend on whether you're a man or a woman, what the reference ranges are for that, but above 60 is kind of the number to shoot for. And then triglycerides, typically the reference range is that they should be below 150 milligrams per deciliter, but I like to see people's below 100.
I agree.
I feel like anywhere between 100 and 150 is still a bit high. So one thing I wanted to mention as far as the lipid panel goes is that these numbers are generally going to be higher in people who are in the process of losing weight, especially if you're losing a lot of weight at a time. So make sure that your weight is generally stable within about a 10-pound range for a good 6 months before you take these numbers seriously. And this is especially for the triglyceride number and then also just total cholesterol, because if your body's releasing a lot of fat during weight loss, then all of that fat's going to be in your blood and it's going to be elevated, even if you're not eating a lot of carbs or a lot of junk food or whatever, like that may actually raise triglycerides in a normal person.
Yeah, I
So
think a lot of people get freaked out when they, see their blood work after they've kind of just started their paleo journey, maybe a couple months into it, and they happen to get blood work done and they go, "Oh my God, it's really, really high." And not even really high, but it's a lot higher than it was before, and they kind of think that that's a bad sign, that the diet isn't working or something like that, but it is a, transient thing that does happen when you do start to lose some weight. So keep that in mind. And I would say, if you do have either higher cholesterol or even if you just have, a family history of cardiovascular disease, if you want to go above and beyond the basic cholesterol panel, which, as we kind of discussed and we know, is not super accurate, you can ask for an NMR lipoprotein profile test, and that'll tell you how many LDL particles you have and give you an idea of what size they are, which is a much better indicator of cardiovascular health.
And I would say anyone that has cholesterol above 300, or a man that has a cholesterol level that's above 250, should probably get that test done. It's if you're a 30-year-old woman that has a cholesterol of 220, you're probably fine,
You're
and
fine.
don't worry about it too much. But if you're an older person, an older man especially, and you have higher than 250, it may be a good test worth getting.
Yeah, and you can also ask for ApoB, which is an option that kind of also approximates how many LDL particles you have too.
Okay, so did you want to go with the next one?
Yeah, sure. So, and this is kind of a more basic one that pretty much everyone probably gets at their physical, whether or not their physician is an awesome physician or just a barely competent physician, but that's the metabolic panel. And usually you'll get a comprehensive metabolic panel is what it's called. And that tests your blood sugar level, your electrolytes and fluid balance, and your kidney and liver function. So when you get that back, you'll see levels for sodium, potassium, calcium, chloride, carbon dioxide, along with something called BUN and creatinine, which are markers of kidney function, and things called ALT and AST, which are markers of liver function. You'll also get your fasting blood sugar level. You should be fasting before you get this test taken. So when they test your glucose, it's a fasting glucose level. And this test is great, as it just gives us a really good general overview of the body, which is why it's a pretty standard physical lab test that you'll get. If your fasting blood sugar level is high, that's an indicator to check out more things that'll tell you more about your metabolic health, and check for prediabetes, diabetes, any of that stuff. If your BUN and creatinine aren't doing so well, then it's a sign that your kidney function isn't great. And same thing goes for ALT and AST for the liver. So this test, it basically just picks up on a lot of the big warning signs. So it's something that you should be getting every year. And if you're not, I would definitely add that to your list. But usually your physician will, they'll do that for you.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for a physician to not run that unless you're getting like a second round of testing done just to check on other things. I mean, usually with the metabolic panel, if something's off there, it's usually a sign of a pretty serious condition. Not necessarily the blood sugar, but something like if your sodium's super low or if your blood calcium is high, it's like that stuff doesn't happen that often. So usually those tests are run just to make sure that there's nothing crazy happening. But again, kidney function's an important part of that, and blood sugar again is important. Did you have anything you wanted to add additional to that,
Well,
or?
just on top of that, that's sort of the first thing they'll run in terms of blood sugar. But beyond that, and something that I would probably recommend people get on a regular basis, is a hemoglobin A1C, which is a marker of your average glucose levels over the last 2 to 3 months. So that basic, comprehensive metabolic panel will test your fasting glucose, which is just kind of a snapshot of where your glucose level is right then. And it does give us a lot of information, but something that will give you a more average look at what your blood sugar's been is that hemoglobin A1C. So I definitely recommend getting that as well.
Right. And I think it's especially important to get that done if you do have high fasting blood sugar
Yeah.
because sometimes people can actually have elevated blood sugar in the morning due to things beyond either diabetes or insulin resistance. So you can have elevated blood sugar if you have cortisol dysregulation, if you're under an extreme amount of stress. Or even if you had a blood sugar drop overnight that led to a responsive rise in the morning. And some people actually find that eating a little carbohydrate before bed can actually help get these high fasting blood sugar levels down to a normal range in the morning. So, if you're on a low carb diet and you're having a high fasting blood sugar, don't necessarily assume that that you're eating too many carbohydrates. And I think the hemoglobin A1C is a good way to kind of verify whether you're fast or whether your glucose is generally high or if it's just high in the morning. Because if you have a high fasting glucose but then a pretty normal HbA1c, then I would consider other reasons as far as stress and that kind of stuff as being a potential reason for that high fasting glucose. So it is possible to have high insulin and normal fasting blood sugar. So that's not ideal either, as that indicates a level of insulin resistance even without having the high blood sugar. So not that, I don't want people to worry if their fasting glucose is normal and they haven't gotten their insulin tested, but having that insulin number can be helpful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. So just to review, so for sugar, beyond the comprehensive metabolic panel, which will include your fasting glucose, you should consider hemoglobin A1C, which you'll see abbreviated as HbA1c, and your fasting insulin.
Right.
All right, go for the
Cool.
next one, Laura.
Sure. So, I think a really helpful panel to do for most people is a thyroid panel. So, a lot of times doctors will only test TSH if you ask them to test your thyroid. TSH is the thyroid stimulating hormone, and that usually is what they use to determine hypo or hyperthyroidism, although it's not really the best test. Especially for hypothyroidism, that's not necessarily overt. Usually, you have to ask to get the full thyroid panel done, which will include things like the free T3, free T4, also reverse T3, which is a form of T3 that is inactive, but your body converts active T3 to reverse T3 in certain situations. So, having some reverse T3 is totally normal, but if it's high, it means you're likely over converting the active T3 to reverse T3. And in some people, that can actually result in functional hypothyroidism. So, maybe a normal TSH and even maybe a normal T4 level, but you may have lower T3 or you may have higher reverse T3. So, in either of those situations, that could mean that your thyroid is not functioning at an optimal level. I often see people who are on the low carb diets having somewhat lower active T3 levels, even if their TSH and T4 is normal. And then reverse T3, like I mentioned, could be a sign of an infection. So, something like Lyme disease is typically. You'll usually see a higher reverse T3 in chronic Lyme. So, again, TSH is usually the first thing they test. So, if you have a clearly elevated TSH or, clearly super low TSH, it is pretty good indicator of poor thyroid function. But it's really important that if you have a normal TSH, that you still, especially if you have thyroid symptoms, you definitely want to get those other numbers checked because it's possible that your TSH can be normal, but you may have, subclinical hypothyroidism or even hyperthyroidism.
Yeah, and just a note on TSH too. There's a lot of research and kind of debate about the range for TSH that's quote unquote normal, usually the lab value, will go up to 5. And in this case, so the higher your TSH, you're actually more hypothyroid. So you have lower thyroid function. So just so that's clear. But so that lab range usually goes up to 5. But there's a lot of people that disagree with that, and a lot of research kind of showing that that may not be the best. So a lot of researchers kind of think that either 3 or below, or even 2 and below, is normal. So just keep that in mind. If you have like a 4.5 TSH, or even like a 4, and you have the symptoms as well, you might want to look into finding a doctor who will treat you based on your symptoms and, what some doctors would consider a slightly elevated TSH also.
Yeah, I actually personally would consider anything above 2 an elevated TSH. I think ideal is either below 1.7, and I actually forget how low it can go before it's.
I do too, actually. Yeah.
Because I almost never see anyone with a low TSH, so
Right.
it's.
So more often high.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily indicate poorly functioning thyroid. It could be, again, maybe you have an overconversion of reverse T3, and another issue is poor conversion from T4 to T3, which is actually pretty common in people on long-term very low carb diets, so that can cause TSH to go up. So there's a lot of different reasons why thyroid function might not be optimal, and you definitely want to have those different numbers to kind of have an idea of what could potentially be going on.
Exactly. And if you've never gotten it tested before, you can also ask for your thyroid antibodies to be tested. And that just is an indicator, if they come back high, that there's an autoimmune process that is attacking the thyroid. So it's not something that you need to get every year, definitely. But if you've never gotten a thyroid panel before, and especially if you're having symptoms of, thyroid problems, I would suggest getting those tested. And especially, if you're like on that borderline, so anything over 2 for the TSH, I would just get it tested just to be sure there's no autoimmune activity happening either.
Right. Cool. So you want to move on to the next one?
Sure. All right. So, and this person obviously already mentioned this in their question, but vitamin D is a great thing to ask for. And I'm really not sure why a lot of doctors still don't test for this on a regular basis, like at your physical every year. But it still seems to be one of those lab tests that really isn't typical to get on a yearly basis. And a lot of people need it more than on a yearly basis. So if it's not something that's included, I would definitely ask for it. And Laura, why don't you talk about the different kinds, of vitamin D tests that you can ask for?
Right. Well, so usually if you just ask for vitamin D without specifying, you'll get the 120, or I'm sorry, the 25 hydroxy vitamin D, which is
Right.
the inactive form of vitamin D. That test is fine. It's not a problem. It's probably a more common test to get done on a regular basis because it's cheaper. It's kind of, the standard vitamin D test that people will run. I think getting that one done on a regular basis is totally fine if you want to get that done on a yearly basis just to kind of keep an eye on where your vitamin D is. The ideal range for those standard vitamin D tests, I think, and this is my opinion based on research.
And hotly contested
Right,
everywhere.
right, right. But it's there's a lot of different information. So my opinion is that the ideal range for the standard vitamin D test is between 30 and 60 nanograms per
And yeah,
milliliter.
I would agree with that as well.
So yeah, so I see a lot of people saying that higher is better. Some reference ranges go up to like 100. From what I've read and from the information that I've seen, I don't think higher than 60 is actually healthy. I think there's a bell curve as far as, you don't want to go lower than 30, but you don't want to go above 60. And usually, if you're seeing vitamin D above 60, it's from supplementation. I don't think it's very easy to get vitamin D that high just from the sun. So that's one reason why I think people should get this tested on a regular basis, is because there are a lot of people taking vitamin D supplements and just taking vitamin D and not taking the other fat soluble vitamins that are required to go with vitamin D. So, if you're taking vitamin D and you get your test back and it says you're in like the 80s or 90s or something, I feel like it's really important to stop taking vitamin D there.
Yeah, or at least lower your dose, right?
Yeah, I mean, I recently had a client whose vitamin D was at 113 when I first saw her, and I was like, oh my gosh, you need to stop taking vitamin D like immediately. And I think it was a month later she got it retested and it was down in the 90s. So good. Not that that's, you know, that's still high, but it was a good 20 point drop. So I was glad to see that. But the other type of vitamin D that is actually a more specific marker is the 1,25 OH, or also called the calcitriol level of vitamin D. Again, this is not going to be a common test, and I almost don't even think you would necessarily need to get it done unless, A, you have either a super low average vitamin D test, or a very high vitamin D test, or if you have symptoms of vitamin D deficiency. So, you know, if you have like osteoporosis, osteopenia, that kind of stuff, that but you do have a normal vitamin D test using the 25-hydroxy, then you may want to get the calcitriol tested. The reference range for calcitriol, I looked it up, and it's usually between 17 to 75 nanograms per liter for healthy adults. So if you have high calcitriol, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are taking in too much vitamin D. It could actually be a sign of low calcium intake. So, you know, again, if your vitamin D is normal, your 25-OH vitamin D is normal, then, you know, getting that additional test isn't necessarily required. But if your vitamin D is low or super high, or if you're having the symptoms, then I think it's helpful to know that that number.
Yeah, definitely. And I would totally agree with that. Vitamin D is just one of those ones that you really just want to get tested in some capacity at least once a year. And if you're either low or high, you'll want to get it tested more often than that, because you want to try to figure out, especially if it's low, you want to try to figure out what you need to supplement with, or how much sun exposure you need to get on a regular basis to kind of keep it within that range.
Right.
So you need to test a little bit more often if you're, you know, you're on either end of those extremes, just to see what you need to do to get it within the normal range.
Right. And, you know, it might depend on where you live too. Say you live in the northern part of the hemisphere, or maybe super southern if you're in, you know, Australia or something, then you may want to get it tested more often than someone who lives near the equator and is getting more sun on a regular basis. And certainly if you're supplementing with it, then I think it's good to get tested at least once a year, because you don't want to you don't want to be supplementing with vitamin D if your vitamin D levels are high. That's actually pretty dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, are there any other kind of basic ones that you wanted to go over, Laura?
So I think one that we should mention also is the complete blood count. That's usually just going to test your hemoglobin and different measures of red and white blood cells, but you can also get an iron panel done with that. So that'll test your total iron, your ferritin, your iron saturation. And those numbers are especially important for men, just because men and also non-menstruating women, so any woman who is postmenopausal. This is because there is a possibility of people having too much iron, whether it's from excessive intake or certain iron storage diseases that can cause high storage of iron. And if this is someone, if you're someone that actually has an iron storage disease, you have to be really careful about how much iron you're taking in on a regular basis. You know, if you have an iron storage disease, you actually need to kind of restrict those types of foods. So I feel like when somebody's on a paleo diet that promotes those kind of foods, knowing if your iron levels are over the reference ranges is really important. So, and this could also go for people that have poor blood sugar control, because excess iron can affect your blood sugar. And also if you have a high inflammation marker in your blood. So,
that was another one I was going to mention, actually. I forgot about that.
High C-reactive protein, which is HSCRP, It's a measure of inflammation. It's a sensitive test for it. And it's high CRP is often seen in autoimmune disease, heart disease, and other diseases of inflammation. So if you have a high C-reactive protein, you should get your iron tested just because, it could actually be from excess iron.
Yeah, and that's something that's really, it's actually pretty common to have, high iron, especially for men. And it's something that doctors just these days, they just don't really pick up on it a lot of times. So if you have any of like metabolic disease, all these things that you were just talking about, Laura, it's definitely worth it to just, get an iron panel on a regular basis and check all those numbers out.
Right, especially if you know one of your relatives has
Yes.
hemochromatosis or some type of iron storage disease.
Yeah, and usually if you do know that, they'll tell you to get a genetic test to make sure, that you're okay. But definitely, if you know that someone has a genetic issue with, iron storage, so hemochromatosis, for example, you definitely want to get both your iron levels tested and your genetic testing as well.
And then finally, the other thing to add on to the complete blood count is vitamin B12 levels. Just because, if you have anemia or if you have a super high MCV, which is the mean I can't even say this word. Is it
Corpuscular.
corpuscular?
Yeah.
The mean corpuscular volume, the MCV, if that's high, that actually could indicate a B12 deficiency. So this is really important for people who are coming from a plant-based diet and doing paleo. B12 is also important for anyone who has any sort of neurological symptoms. It's possible that you may have something called an MTHFR mutation. So, if you are having symptoms of just there's like so many symptoms of vitamin B12 deficiency, I can't even get into it, but it's important to know if your B12 levels are low or if they're super high, or combining that with the complete blood count can be helpful, especially if people are dealing with things like fatigue or brain fog or that kind of thing.
Definitely, yeah. Cool. So
I think that's it.
I
I'm
think
just looking at
that's
my
it
list.
too, because I'm glad we ended up talking about HSCRP because that was on my list, but
Yeah,
I didn't see it.
CRP is really important for anyone who thinks that they may have some level of inflammatory disease going on, just because, people tend to say, oh, I have inflammation, but I mean, you may just be feeling inflamed versus, if you have high C-reactive protein, that's actually indicating
There is severe inflammation happening.
So, I mean, sometimes it's like, you might feel inflamed. Maybe you're just working out really hard or something versus, it's significantly elevated CRP is actually, there's some type of metabolic inflammation going on and it's something you need to look into further.
So I think, yeah, that's our whole list. And, really all this stuff is generally stuff that your physician will have no problem ordering if you ask for it. Of course, that depends on your physician, but most of them will really order all of these, no questions asked, just, say you'd like to get them tested. The only ones your doctor might look at you, a little bit sideways for are possibly the NMR profile or ApoB, and that's just because most physicians really just think that the cholesterol panel is sufficient, and so they really don't think about those particle numbers at all, especially if you're kind of within that normal range for cholesterol currently. So that's just something to keep in mind, approach it lightly with them, maybe bring in some research if you're really wanting to get it done. And it's good to educate your physician too. And just come from a place of really wanting to share the knowledge and hope that you can help them to help their patients better too. Not like, why aren't you testing this for me,
Well, and one thing I might want to mention, as far as some of the more in-depth testing goes, it may depend on your health insurance whether or not you really want to do some of these tests. The NMR profile is a good example, but also the calcitriol, which is the active vitamin D. Some of these tests are actually pretty expensive to run. If you have a really good health insurance that covers basically any testing, then that's great. But I know for myself, I have a pretty low level health insurance, so I'm not sure if it would cover some of these more expensive tests and that kind of thing. And unless you're really concerned about, say, having cardiovascular disease or having an autoimmune disease, then we don't necessarily think that, people just need to go out and get all these crazy expensive blood tests. So the best indicator really is how you feel. And if you feel like, you're getting blood work done, but it's just super basic and you still feel like you're having symptoms, then definitely
Right.
feel free to kind of push your doctor a little bit and, ask them, can we just test this and see what it is? Because I have a feeling that I have an issue with this condition or this particular potential blood test. So,
Yeah.
it's always worth a go. And like I said, if you have really good health insurance, it shouldn't be an issue.
Yep, cool.
All right. Well, hopefully that was helpful. Like I said, it would probably be a good idea to have this kind of list written out. So maybe we'll look into doing that at some point. But for now, hopefully you can just take some notes after this podcast and bring them to your doctor.
Right, exactly. So good luck with, I think a lot of us are, generally healthy. So just getting these things done on a regular basis just, gives us that extra satisfaction of knowing that we're kind of on the right track, doing the right things, and we're in the healthy range of all of these things. So it's definitely something to do on a regular basis. And
Right. And
yeah, now you have a list.
that said, try not to freak out if anything's a little weird. I mean, I mentioned that we want our HDL to be above 60 as a, personal story. I just got my basic blood work done a few weeks ago and I saw my HDL was 49 and I was like, "Wait a second, that's lower than it's supposed to be." And I mean, I could probably, be the type of person that freaks out and starts researching how to raise my HDL, but honestly, it's not concerning. It's not optimal, but I eat saturated fat. I eat, a pretty healthy diet overall, so I'm not too concerned about it being a smidge lower than it should be.
Right.
So,
Don't let any of this stuff stress you out.
right.
It's
So.
all just information, and you can react to that information, but try to do it from a place of not stressing, because that's just going to make all of it worse.
Right. So, all right. Well, hopefully that was helpful. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the question and answer sessions.
All right. Take care, Laura.
You too, Kelsey.